Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
Welcome to the free version of the Michael Savage podcast, and I'm going to keep it free for all of you. But there are many of you who would love to be able to listen to my show without any ads. I love ads, but many of you want to listen to the podcast free of ads. So we created something for you, a solution. We call it the Savage Premium. For less than the price of one flat, tasteless beer at your local bar, you can receive access to all of my podcasts going back years, ad-free for just $3.99. That's it, $3.99 a month. You'll get not only my ad-free podcast, but you will also occasionally receive access to material that is exclusive for members only, and I'm going to give you the list in a minute of what you've missed. You're going to get an occasional monologue from me, maybe a reading from one of my novels, sneak peeks of interviews before anyone else hears them, archive pieces dating back to 1994. Many things that come up, you're going to get exclusive access to Michael Savage material. Details can be seen on my website, michaelsavage.com, and if you want to join, all you got to do is go to glow.fm and search Savage Premium. That's glow.fm and search Savage Premium. Now, you will always have access to my free weekly podcast. I want to be clear about that. That's my promise to you. But if you want less ads and more Savage, join the Savage Premium Club today and never miss a spoken word of mine. It's glow.fm/savagepremium. You can find it on michaelsavage.com. And here's some of the stuff that you have missed so far. Michael Savage reading from his best-selling novel, Countdown to Mecca. My words, my voice. Savage reads from one of his lost journals, Fiji, 1968. Savage's first drive-time show, Hour One. My interview with the Jewish gangster, very popular. I read from my first written published article, Who Is at the Helm, from 1965. It's heard nowhere but on my premium site. I read passages from my novel, Abuse of Power. We replayed Fat Al's Tuna. My Savage show from 324.94, the earliest show in the archive, 324.94. My interview with Donald Trump from 110.2011. 110.2011, while Mark Levin was mocking him and Sean Hannity was mocking him and the others were mocking him, I was interviewing Trump. Much more. And remember, subscribers also get ad-free podcasts every week. The cost is less than a beer at a bar, and you get a better buzz with the Savage Premium. So go to glow.fm/savagepremium for full access to ad-free podcasts and exclusive sound you'll not hear anywhere else. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Michael Savage Podcast. In my 27-year career, I've done several important interviews, several important shows, funny shows. I've done a lot. I would say today's podcast is amongst the most important or the most important I've ever done. I interviewed Dr. Robert Malone, who is the discoverer of in vitro and in vivo RNA transfection and the inventor of mRNA vaccines while he was at the Salk Institute in 1988. But that's not what's important. Dr. Malone has just been banned from Twitter because they said he was spreading vaccine misinformation. It's hard to believe that they would take a leading scientist in the field and use hacks to say he's spreading vaccine misinformation. He is under attack from the mainstream media because he's simply trying to bring out the facts that these vaccines have caused serious side effects, even deaths, and especially what they are doing to our children. Okay? Now, he has been on other shows, important shows, Joe Rogan and others. But what you're going to hear on my show is different than anyone else's for a number of reasons. And I don't want to preempt myself, but we go beyond vaccines and immunology, and we actually talk about Native American cures, anthropology, and things like that. Today's podcast is part one of this amazing interview where we discuss these and other topics. Our interview was interrupted several times by a mysterious internet outage, and we overcame it. So listen very carefully, and then you will hear the whole interview later on in the week. Dr. Malone?
Sir. Hey, hey, thank you so much for being on the show today. I know you've been around on this for a while. Boy, are they hammering you. People who have nowhere near your level of credibility or credentials are making believe that you don't know what you're talking about, and they're the experts. And of course, I'm a man who really respects degrees and expertise. So I'm honored to have you on the show. Dr. Malone, you are the discoverer of in vitro and in vivo RNA transfection and the inventor of mRNA vaccines when you were at the Great Salk Institute in 1988. And yet we have people like writers for The Atlantic saying the vaccine scientists spreading vaccine misinformation. Robert Malone claims to have invented mRNA technology. Why is he trying so hard to undermine its use? Why are they so adamant in trying to debase you, Dr. Malone? What are they doing here?
So, and thanks for the opportunity to be here, coming hot off the Joe Rogan podcast that apparently has basically broken the internet, as near as I can tell. It's like the top-ranked podcast in the United States right now. And the whole topic of mass formation psychosis was trending so hard that Google went in and edited using humans the priority stack for response to put find they found somebody to discredit me when it isn't even my theory. they shot the wrong target, but it doesn't matter. It basically what's fascinating is all of this is validating Matthias Desmet's whole theory of mass formation psychosis. In the case of the Atlantic.
Let me back it up for my listeners. Mass vaccination psychosis is what you're claiming, right?
If I misstated, I apologize. Mass formation psychosis.
Mass formation psychosis. Before we get into that, Dr. Malone, I have to ask a simpler question for the average listener who may not even follow half the stuff that I hope to get into. A very well-educated woman in her 70s said to me, can you please ask Dr. Malone, if children are vaccinated against rubella and measles and such as infants, why is he opposed to using a COVID vaccine on children? What's the difference?
Difference is huge. Those are licensed vaccines that have been around for decades. We know the risk-benefit ratio for those. They're very clear. They're also licensed products. This is not a licensed product. Mm. What you have is an experimental medical product for which there's so little initial data on in children that the member of the VRBPAC, that's the Vaccine Related Safety Advisory Board for the FDA, who happens to also be the chief editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, made the statement that, well, we don't know what the risk-benefit ratio is in children, so we're just going to have to start vaccinating them. That was the basis for the policy decision. These are unlicensed vaccines using a novel technology that is unproven in terms of its risk-benefit ratio. And what we now know, the data are coming in fast and hard. So for your viewer listener, just here's one little fun fact. Hong Kong did a massive study on the incidence of hospitalized myocarditis in children post-vaccination. So they filtered it, only looking at post-vaccination. Now, the post-vaccination myocarditis is about 98% of all childhood myocarditis verified peer-reviewed publication. Okay, I think it was in Nature. So this Hong Kong study looked at all hospitalized myocarditis in children associated with the vaccine. The incidence rate for boys is 1 in 2,700. So out of every 2,700 boys that get vaccinated, they have such bad heart damage that it puts them in the hospital. Now, you're not going to find that with those other childhood vaccines, thank God.
Holy God. 98% of all myocarditis cases in boys is a result of the vaccine?
In children. And then the incidence rate by the Hong Kong Comprehensive Study, very large sample size, is 1 in 2,700 in boys. Boys have it higher than girls do, but girls get it too.
So your main concern is that it's not been tested and that we have evidence that it does cause problems that are very severe in boys.
Well, it's more than that. The young lady is of a certain age that she will remember perhaps World War II. And she may remember the Nuremberg trials. And just to recap, in the Nuremberg trials, we established that it was absolutely unacceptable to force humans to take an unlicensed medical product without voluntary consent based on full informed understanding about risk and benefit. Instead, what we've got is governments inserting themselves, demanding forced vaccination of children with a basically a toxic preparation that is not yet licensed and has no significant prior clinical history. That's a little bit different, I'm being facetious, compared to the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines.
What is the mRNA vaccine? What is an mRNA vaccine for people who don't even know what it means? What is it?
Okay, so let's start with the acronym. mRNA stands for messenger ribonucleic acid. That happens to be the genome material. It's the chemical that the virus itself uses for its genome. This particular virus, SARS-CoV-2, is a RNA virus. It's not a DNA virus. Another RNA virus that your audience is familiar with is influenza. Another one they may not be familiar with, but they've absolutely been infected by, is the circulating beta coronaviruses that are closely related to SARS-CoV-2. So those are also RNA viruses. In the mRNA technology for vaccination, what you are doing is using gene therapy tech developed at the Salk in the late 80s that enables you to slip this messenger RNA, messenger ribonucleic acid chemical into your cells, and it forces those cells that receive it to become little manufacturing factories that actually produce the vaccine material, which is the spike protein. Didn't that make sense? That's the really short version.
And of course it does. No, you don't object to vaccines in general. I want to make that very clear.
I am a 30 plus year veteran of vaccine development. It is what I do for a living. I have won over $8 billion in grants and contracts or managed them for the federal government. I often sit on NIH study sections as the section chair for awarding contracts in the range of $80 to $120 million for biodefense and vaccine development. I was at the tip of the spear in bringing forward the Ebola vaccine candidate that came from Canada that we now call the Merck Ebola vaccine. I'm the one that got Merck involved in that project. I can go on and on and on and on and on.
So you're an expert, one of the leading experts, probably the most expert person in this mRNA vaccine development. You're not opposed to vaccines. You believe in the potential of RNA-based vaccines, but you are skeptical about this one for children because it's not been tested and you fear there are side effects such as...
No, I would say it much stronger. The data are in now. It is unequivocal that the risk benefit for children is upside down. More children will die from this mandated jab than will die from the virus. Part of that is because the virus is extremely non-toxic in children. It doesn't cause childhood death. Now, Scott Gottlieb, who used to be an FDA director, but now is a shill for Pfizer. He sits on the Pfizer.
I noticed he changed his tune. I met him at a party at one of President Trump's events. And then he seemed rational and reasonable. And then all of a sudden, recently, he became a different kind of personality.
So on Bannon's show today, there was a really nice clip of Gottlieb spouting off about what the risks are in children. And there's been over 600 children that have died and blah, blah, blah. That is pure propaganda. There was a major study done, I think it was in Nature or Lancet, that tracked down every one of those deaths in children. And every one of those children that died had a major pre-existing condition, one or more. So in other words, they didn't die of COVID, they died with COVID.
Well, that's true across the board in the COVID reporting, as I understand it, around the world, is that so many other deaths are not directly related to COVID. It's just an associated illness with other underlying conditions, correct?
And in our case here in the US government, I covered this on Rogan, the government has created perverse incentives for hospitals. Basically, I'm going to say it, this is a bit blunt. Hospitals have a financial incentive to have people die of COVID. They get a price, they get an award for it. They get extra money, and they get extra money if anybody in the hospital can be claimed to have the virus. Okay. They get extra money if they intubate you. Okay. They even, I've heard of extra money if they administer some of these drugs that Tony has pushed that are highly toxic.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a lot of money involved in the vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, and they, of course, don't want anyone to even question the data, let alone support your data, which is that they're toxic for children.
They actively try to block it and censor it and propagandize around it and everything else. Now, I'm trained in medical affairs, and in that area and discipline, it is very explicit, the FDA guidance, you cannot market an unlicensed product, full stop. So what Pfizer has done is they've found surrogates and shills that present themselves like Big Bird on CNN and present themselves as if they're objective third parties, when in fact, they're being paid by Pfizer. That's how Pfizer is indirectly marketing these unlicensed products.
We need to take a short break. We'll be right back on the Michael Savage Podcast.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
Thanks for staying with us. We're back with more of my interview with Dr. Robert Malone.
I'd love to get back to the Atlantic Monthly. I kind of took you off that track.
No, I'm looking at the article because I took the exact op, and I know the Atlantic very well. I know their orientation, et cetera. And they don't have much credibility from my point of view.
Well, and it's
they try to rip you apart on all the wrong.
Yeah, it's a fascinating. We just lost power here. It's back on again.
Going off and on.
Yeah, we had 6 inches of snow, which is a big deal.
Are you on a generator? Is that what's going on?
I think so. In any case, getting back to the Atlantic article. So let's just set the stage here. Atlantic went bankrupt and it got sold. And it got bought by Bill Gates and Steve Jobs' widow.
Oh, boy.
Atlantic is now a mouthpiece for Silicon Valley oligarchs.
Oh, my God.
The attack article that you're looking at, which is fascinating.
It is.
You can see at the bottom, it just is a piece of horribly written, calling it
that.
Journalism.
Grants from the Zuckerberg Initiative and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I said, oh, my God.
Now, remember, Robert Wood Johnson is the major shareholder of Johnson & Johnson.
I know.
So this is pure propaganda. And it's important to understand that this was written in reaction to the Peter Navarro and the op-ed piece that Peter Navarro and I put out in the Washington Times. Now let's reel back to that. Okay. So this is a reaction to that. This is the first op-ed, is many, many months ago. And it came off of talks that we had on Bannon's show. And so Peter Navarro and I got together and wrote this op-ed in the Washington Times. We recommended three things. Number one, reserve the vaccines only for those that need it most. Mm. That is basically the Great Barrington Declaration. Mm. Number two, make early test kits available to everybody, widely available, so that people can know whether or not they actually have this virus. Make early treatment available. And make apps available on people's cell phones so that you can overcome the fear that so many people have, and they could look up their risk is, because most of us are risk tiny. And for children, healthy children, the risk is essentially zero.
We just lost you for about 30 seconds.
I apologize. Probably my internet server is also fluctuating with this power outage we had. So
I'm getting phenomenal information here. And what I don't like about this article in The Atlantic, I don't like anything about it. I know it's pure propaganda, but listen to this. I have to read this to the audience. And I'm quoting now, it's only in the curious world of fringe media that Malone has found the platform and the recognition he sought for so long. He talks to hosts who aren't going to question whether he's the brains behind the Pfizer and Moderna shots. They're not going to quibble over whether credit should be shared with co-authors or talk about how science is like a relay race or point out that apps and the hard work above. He's an upgrade over their typical guest list of chiropractors and naturopaths, and they're perfectly happy to address him by the title he believes he's earned, inventor of the mRNA vaccines. That's actually horrible. All of that is all wrong. Everything about it is wrong.
So I was just on the biggest media platform probably in the world right now. There's a good chance that my Joe Rogan podcast, which is now rated number one, I believe, in the United States, is going to hit over 50 million views.
Well, I hope that we achieve a little bit of it as well.
So the important point here, let me tell you something about the author of this little attack piece.
Yeah.
First off, he was incredulous. He kept asking, it's in the title. His focus was basically, what is the conflict of interest that I have that it's causing me to speak out about fundamentals of vaccine safety and bioethics?
This is Tom Bartlett, the author of the Atlantic article?
Yeah. Now unpack that for a minute. Who does Tom Bartlett usually write for? The Chronicle of Higher Education.
Oh, my God.
What is Tom Bartlett's usual angle? He's really pro-wokeism. Okay, that's what he writes about.
Oh, so everything is from the far left position.
Okay, so they've hired him for this attack piece. And you'll notice down at the bottom, my good friend Stan Gromkowski, in his lovely little quote, which he insisted if they were going to quote him, they had to quote him verbatim. Now, any of your audience, none of them probably know Stan, but if they did, they would know that the words that are printed there are perfect Stan Gromkowski. That's actually him on a good day. He is a little salty in his language.
Stan Gromkowski, a cellular immunologist who did work on mRNA vaccines in the early 1990s and views Malone as an underappreciated pioneer, put it this way, he's fucking up his chances for a Nobel Prize.
Right. So Stan is actually the one that took my job at Vicel after I left and went back to finish my MD after my wife finished her bachelor's degree at UC San Diego. So this is a total soup to nuts hit piece that was designed to take me out at the point in time when I was starting to speak out about public policy in the Biden administration. Mm. And just to kind of throw a little more salt into the wound,
good.
The main position that Peter and I were taking, let's unpack that for a moment, was that if they kept using universal vaccination, we would have the development of vaccine escape mutants. Oh, what do we have now? It's called Delta and Omicron, our vaccine escape mutants. Okay, so we nailed it on that one. And we said that they absolutely should only use the vaccines for the people that are most needing it, because otherwise we will develop these escape mutants and those people will then be susceptible to infection. What do we have right now? Exactly what we predicted. Okay. And the fundamental position we took was that of the Great Barrington Declaration, which is the Great Barrington Declaration is written by these fringe. Now, let's get this. You remember the emails that were subpoenaed and FOIA'd recently from Tony Fauci, Cliff Lane, and Francis Collins, okay? Remember those emails where they said they were going to destroy and attack these fringe epidemiologists who had come out with this position called the Great Barrington Declaration that was that these mandates and the lockdowns didn't make sense? Okay. And you'll recall that Collins and Fauci conspired, it's shown in those emails, to destroy the reputation of these, quote, fringe epidemiologists. Now, let's unpack that. The fringe epidemiologists were full professors of epidemiology at the obscure universities called Oxford, Harvard, and Stanford. Now, Tony Fauci or Francis Collins or Cliff Lane, any degrees in epidemiology and public health? The answer is no.
I've watched Fauci since the AIDS epidemic. And although I wasn't in the media at the time, I was outraged at what he was doing. Instead of calling for controlling this, I mean, I studied epidemiology as part of my doctoral work. I wasn't a great genius in the field, but I found that epidemiology is not so much a science as it is great intuition in some areas, by the way. The rest is mathematical, where you could almost prove anything, but it's all based upon common sense and intuition. So you go back to the source of infection with the AIDS epidemic. And at the time, the bathhouses were an issue in San Francisco. I spoke out against keeping them open. And of course, I lost all of my liberal friends. I only had liberal friends at the time. They never talked to me again. They called me Hitler. I had no idea why. I said, I'm just trying to limit the spread of the disease. Fauci never talked about behavioral elements during the great, horrible outbreak of AIDS. He talked only about using AZT. How does a man survive over 45 years as a bureaucrat in a government unless there's corruption? By the way, is he the longest serving bureaucrat in American history?
Yeah, he's essentially become J. Edgar Hoover. He knows he's got the goods. He's got the goods on everybody. If he retires right now, his annual pension is going to be about $350,000 a year.
That's what we know of.
He operates basically a mafia and has for decades. I've lived under him my whole career.
Wow.
For you, you've seen him. For me, I've had to deal with him on a regular basis.
So he's just what he looks like.
That's what he is, okay? He runs a cabal.
Yeah.
And he leverages this massive amount of capital that he has to gain control of the entire academic research community. Now, you don't take my word for it. Read Bobby Kennedy's book, which is extensively footnoted, and you'll see all you need to know about Anthony Fauci. So this is Bobby Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, the real Anthony Fauci, number one bestseller on Amazon for weeks, never reviewed by any never reviewed by any major media, and yet it's still number one. So read that book.
I asked myself why Donald Trump didn't fire Fauci. There was a lot of pressure even then. And I think I have an answer to that, which I'd rather not even talk about right now. But there's something wrong going back to the Trump administration. His connections are so vast and so deep in the pharmaceutical and other industries that he's almost an untouchable.
Yep.
Going back to the Elliot Ness series, he's above the law. The man is above
and
the law.
He is above the law. He is lawless, and he is able to get people fired in the media. That's what he's done. It goes back to the early days of AIDS. That's why they're all so afraid of him.
Oh, my God. We'll be right back.
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
Now with Dr. Robert Malone. Before we lose you for electronic, technical or energy reasons, I come at this disease of COVID from a different point of view, which is the preventive point of view, as I would a cold or the flu. Common sense, again, avoid crowds, wash your hands, take your shoes off when you get home before entering your house like the Japanese have done for 1,000 years. But also the nutraceuticals, also the use of massive doses of certain nutrients, which I know stimulate the immune system, not only for COVID, but other viral infections. And of course, McCulloch's work I'm sure you're familiar with it, with the treatment of COVID with nutraceuticals, correct?
Peter's a good friend, if that's who you're referring to, Peter McCullough. And I wouldn't call it Peter's protocol. There is a coalition of over 16,000 physicians and medical scientists that I serve as president of.
Wow.
And we're closely aligned with the FLCCC. So Pierre Curry and Paul Merrick are personal friends. Peter McCullough is a personal friend. George Farid is a personal friend, et cetera, et cetera. Zev Zelenko somehow considers me his mentor. I'm very flattered by that. What's happened is the censorship and media activities and all of this ugliness that's gone on has driven us all together into quite a tight little community. Now, to your point, you'll never hear Rochelle Walensky or Tony Fauci talk about vitamin D, zinc, or any of the other supplements that you can take to dramatically lower your risk. Okay. You want to have your vitamin
I'm sorry, you broke up.
Tested, you broke up again. You probably know. Get your blood.
You're breaking up again. The sound, but I don't want to distract you into the OTC medicines and nutraceuticals and COVID, because your expertise is certainly overlapping into this area. But the scandal that has been inflicted upon you by the, I would say, big pharma in plain English, because you dared speak out as a dissident. You're like a Soviet dissident. The only thing missing is they haven't rounded you up and put you into a gulag yet. But in essence, you are in a gulag. You're in a gulag with all the rest of us who try to speak out in any way about anything that doesn't go along with the program. So I want the average person who may have lost us to go back to who you are and how big you are. You are the main inventor of the mRNA vaccine.
9 issued patents.
Okay. So I would say you're the main inventor when you were at the great Salk Institute in 1988.
Let me put it this way. Just because engineers designed and built the 737 MAX, and I'm sure you catch the subtlety of that point,
I got it,
doesn't mean that the Wright brothers didn't invent the powered flight. Okay.
I like it. Yes, I got it. So you were thrown off Twitter by some faceless, nameless person in Pakistan?
Yeah, and immediately got 50,000 views on Rogan, switched over to Getter. Getter has now exploded. Rogan is on Getter now. Rogan has 8 million followers on Getter.
I must interject, because I just got something today that should alarm all of us. And I put it on Twitter a little while ago, and I've been slammed to death when I showed that Getter is owned by the CCP, who is gathering social media information. Someone said, Michael Waller published this. What if a reputed communist Chinese spy who pretends to oppose Xi Jinping and says that 99.999% of CCP members are good was behind a new social media app to capture the data of anti-communist conservative MAGA Americans? And that, of course, is Getter. And then I try to say Rogan may be used here. It doesn't mean he's bad, and it doesn't mean he's wrong at everything.
Steve Bannon, come on. This is more, I think there's a term from the Nixon administration. Hopefully you're not going to censor me. This is called rat fucking. Okay.
Well, we don't censor you, but what it's called, who? Rat effing?
Rat fucking.
Why?
Because this is untrue. Bannon is one of the co-founders. Okay.
Yeah, but maybe he's been duped.
Yeah. So this is what they do. This is called concern trolling, you just experienced.
All right. I get it. Controlled opposition as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So we don't know what to believe except the facts themselves. And let's go back.
All I can say is that I've now got my Getter account is exploding, nowhere near as big as Rogan's has. I am not censored. I'm able to put out all my information. I'm not shadow banned. I'm sure that I'm going to hit an easy 500,000 and replace all the Twitter followers. A bunch of the Twitter folks that are pissed off. I mean, there's a whole movement on Twitter right now concerning what happened to me. And of course, there's Alex Berenstein's lawsuit against Twitter, which I may join.
I had him on the show 2 years ago, by the way, before anyone ever heard of him in the media here. But again, I need to focus on your work. It's more important than all of this other stuff. In plain English, you're saying that the dangers involved with these vaccines are very real, and that children shouldn't get them. Is that the basic story here?
Yeah, but you don't have to take my word for it. So that's been my position, just for your audience. My position all the way along, and it's been a long, strange trip for sure, has been not to tell people what to think, as opposed to many, but rather to give them the information and let them make their own decisions. I'm coming from a position of the importance of informed consent. Okay. Now, for your listeners, all you need to do is either or both go to my Substack, R.W. Malone, MD, or go to our website, rwmalonemd.com. Mm-hmm. Click on the tab there for children's vaccines, and you will find a mountain of data that we stood up last week in response to a Reuters attack, fact checker attack. It's all focused on the safety in children. And it also includes the Reuters email, fact checker email, and a ton of documentation about the Trusted News Initiative, the MRHC, which has provided a commentary to the Reuters fact check. So what I did with Reuters on this topic, since they sent this in to me, I had been on the Neil Oliver show on GB News, which is an up-and-coming broadcaster in Great Britain. And I had said some spoke truth about the pediatric vaccines. And so I got fact-checked by Thomson Reuters. So what I did this time, because I know how they play the game now, I've been through it so many times. What I did was my wife, Dr. Jill Glasspool Malone, and I built this website with all these data that came in from all over the world, because I reached out through my network, listed all the data about the risks in children. And then I sent Reuters fact-checking team a really short comment that says, you can find the documentation that you've asked me for at the following website, URL, www.rwmalonemd.com/, and in the tab, the children's tab. I haven't heard squeak from them since. So basically, I forced them into a position where they couldn't cherry pick the data, which is what they usually do, and made it so that it was available to the whole world in case they did put out their hit piece, which they had said they had written a midweek last week, but I've heard nothing from them since.
We'll be right back after this.
The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
We're back now with Dr. Robert Malone. So this is an important question for me. Donald Trump's presidency was the presidency during which these vaccines were put under the expedited development, correct?
Yeah, Operation Warp Speed.
Okay. And he's taking credit for having developed these, quote, beautiful vaccines. You don't think they're beautiful vaccines, do you?
Absolutely not. They are. Yeah. So, judge for yourself. There's hundreds of references, list of the toxicities, the VAERS analysis, or go to Steve Kirsch's Substack, or Jessica Rose's Substack, or Peter McCullough's many papers. It goes on and on and on.
Just get
the data.
Why would children have more adverse effects than adults with these vaccines?
What
then?
The adults have a huge profile of adverse events, but I'm focused on saving the kids from mandated jabs. That's why I serve as chief medical and regulatory officer for the Unity Project. Here comes another plug. www.unityprojectonline.com. Please visit it. Okay. And you can also find a fascinating statement that basically blew up the internet in Israel after the Israeli Ministry of Health attacked me with this usual slander.
Let's go to Israel for a minute. They're kind of revered around the world for their great healthcare system, and yet they're pushing the vaccines more than any other country.
They're bought and paid for by Pfizer.
Isn't it true that they are involved in the development of these vaccines and receive?
Absolutely.
They are.
They're getting a fee from Pfizer, and basically the Ministry of Health. This all happened under Bibi Netanyahu.
Oh my God!
So basically, Pfizer came in. Here's the thing: is that vaccines and drugs in general make so much money, and we pay a premium here in the United States. So we pay more than just about anybody else in the world. And where does all that money go? Well, of course, it goes into investor pockets, et cetera, and salaries. But a big chunk of it funds all of our political campaigns, all the way down to local school board stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Pharma is in our back pocket like nobody's business at all. And it's important to, you know, your viewership, everybody is like, you know, you hear on, well, of course, CNN gave the Pfizer CEO, CEO of the Year Award. Thank you very much, Pfizer, for all the advertising dollars. Here's your award.
Mm-hmm.
But Pfizer is a criminal organization. I can say that without any fear of lawsuit, because they have some of the biggest, I think the biggest criminal awards against them of any pharmaceutical company in the world, including for the sin of bribing physicians.
Oh, my God.
For a company like Pfizer, these fines that they experience from their lawless behavior is the cost of doing business.
Yes. Well, it's like the OxyContin scandal. It's like the OxyContin scandal in a certain way with the Sackler family. They bought off so many museums and so many award-giving committees that they were above the law for decades.
Well, to your point, you remember Janet Woodcock?
I don't remember her. I don't know her name. Sorry.
So she was the head of the FDA and also head of Operation Warp Speed for drugs.
Ah.
Okay. She is credited with the person at the FDA responsible for letting the opioid crisis happen with Oxy.
I see. Got it.
Okay. Now, there's a fascinating clip that Zev Zelenko put together. Now, I'm going to introduce another name, Rick Bright. Rick Bright is the whistleblower that raised such a stink about BARDA during the Trump administration. Remember that? Washington Post, LA Times, blah, blah, blah.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, I guess it was inside the Beltway, but it was a big kerfuffle. He was head of the organization, director of BARDA. He reported directly to the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, which is two away from the president, reports to Azar at the time. Okay. So Rick was basically four away from the president in terms of the organizational chain, in charge of a multi-billion dollar annual budget, the big money. So he's the one that gave J&J the big contract, for example. Mm. Okay. So Rick is on record on video directly saying that he conspired with Janet Woodcock to make it so that physicians couldn't prescribe hydroxychloroquine in the outpatient setting. And he talks about how he did it. He's very proud of it. He directly circumvented the will of the president of the United States, and he's proud of it. And he did it in conjunction with Janet Woodcock.
Mm. God.
That's the way this thing works.
And then he resigned.
Yeah. He did his whistleblower thing.
Yeah.
And then he resigned. Basically, they gave him a closet. And he resigned, and he took a nice, juicy job with the Rockefeller Foundation.
Of course, part and parcel. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned to the Savage Nation podcast.
Home of borders, language, culture. The Savage Nation.
We are back. The COVID vaccine per se, do you oppose it for adults?
So you're asking a really dicey question. Up until recently, my position has been that it is appropriate to use the vaccines like Pfizer and Moderna. Pfizer is more safe than Moderna. J&J is the worst of the lot in terms of the safety signal. And now we have the CDC recommending against using J&J, just to, make that clear. So I have the references down. My position has been that in high-risk individuals and those over 65, that they should be vaccinated. And that was my position in the, in terms of number of jabs, I'm not there. The third and fourth jabs are, as I said on Rogan, knucking futs. And we can go into the immunology of that. They are not good policy. They are damaging people's immune systems.
But why is the second shot generally more intense than the first shot? What's going on in the body?
Intense is one way to put it. Let's call it, if we can use official regulatory jargon and clinical development jargon, it has significantly more adverse events.
Why?
The logic is that there's many hypotheses, but the leading hypothesis is that you need to understand with these jabs that what it's doing is causing your body to make a surge of protein in a tissue that normally doesn't produce that protein that goes all over your body. It has effects on your blood-brain barrier. It has effects on blood clotting. It goes on and on and on. In my case, after the second Moderna jab, I developed stage 3 hypertension with the systolic blood pressure peaking at about 230.
Oh my God.
I'm lucky to still be alive.
You are.
I had basically a stress test of my vessels in my brain and my aorta.
Oh, God. That's a some way to put it.
I'm only alive because of an astute cardiologist that picked it up and got me on therapy right away.
What did he put you on?
I'm not going to go over the medicines right now. But here's the rub. I've been saying that except for the high-risk groups, we shouldn't jab because it will drive the development, the evolutionary development through natural selection, just like overusing antibiotics causes superbugs.
Yep.
It will drive the development of superviruses.
You're breaking up. It will drive the development of... We broke up again. It will drive the development of...
vaccine escape mutants.
Okay, got it.
Superbugs.
Does a single Pfizer shot give any protection at all?
Some, but here's you getting back to your question about why the second dose.
Yes.
What happens is you get the surge of protein and then you make high level antibody responses. And those antibodies then are circulating. You get the second jab. It appears that what's happening is called immune complex formation. You're getting aggregates of antibodies plus this large bulk amount of protein that is in your bloodstream. That's one leading hypothesis.
Oh, that's awful. So it could easily cause a heart attack or a stroke in an older person.
There's no question that it's triggering heart attacks and strokes in older people of a variety of forms. And what's interesting about this from my standpoint, maybe it seems a little macabre, but for me with a background in pathology, it's like all a great big detective story. What's going on? And we have the same kinds of problems associated with the virus, with the mRNA vaccines, and with the adenovirus vaccines. Now, those problems were not seen before with the adenovirus vaccines in terms of the blood clotting, for instance, and the heart attacks and the strokes. The thing that's in common between all three of those is the spike protein.
I spoke with a virologist who said that the spike protein is denuded after 24 hours. Is that true?
No. So there's actually an excellent paper out from an obscure university called Harvard.
Oh, yeah.
Harvard Brigham and Women's and Nurses study early on that demonstrated the circulation of the spike protein in a nurses study for over a month. And then there are multiple studies out subsequently that show that spike is taken up by white blood cell population monocytes of a certain type, and that circulates for a very long time in those cells that are activated and are probably driving a lot of the long COVID as well as the post-vaccination syndrome effects.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
So I need for the average person who's listening and may have lost you along the way. I love every word you're saying, and I'm going to study this. And actually, I'd like to print a transcript of this as well as having a podcast of it and use the transcript somewhere where people can read this work. A single Pfizer shot, does it offer any protection at all?
It offers some protection against the earlier strains. It's important to understand that the Pfizer jab and the Moderna jab were designed for the original Wuhan strain. They are complete mismatches from Omicron, for example.
I understand that because it goes back for me on a basic level. I never took a flu vaccine in my entire life. And the reason is I knew that the flu vaccine we were getting this year was developed from last year's variety or iteration of the flu virus. And it was about 47% effective. So I instead chose...
On a good day.
Chose to stimulate my immune system and be a paranoid and stay away from people. And I was very fortunate. And then with this, though, the social pressure is so great on people to get this vaccine and the mandates and the fascism that's emerging and the cops arresting mothers and children in New York who are not vaccinated. We're reaching a point of no return.
This is why your audience needs to look up mass formation psychosis to understand the deep crazy that's going on. And the key person to look for, you can Google, there's some super video interviews of Matthias Desmet from the University of Ghent on mass formation psychosis if you want to understand all this. But In terms of,
I do understand it because I wrote a book 2 years ago called Mass Hysteria, which goes back well before the Salem witch trials. It's not much different.
Yeah, actually, the Salem witch trials is something that's mentioned by Matthias. And another example is the French Revolution.
Oh, yes.
What's important is that mass formation tends to lead to totalitarianism.
Of course.
And totalitarianism tends to burn through all of its opponents.
Yep.
And then turn on itself.
Right.
And the examples of that are the Jacobins during the French Revolution.
Oh, yes.
And Stalin and his ended up purging some
Pol Pot on a minor scale because he only killed 3 million.
And of course, there's Adolf. The story goes on and on. These are all historic examples of mass formation psychosis. And you need to understand that to understand what's going on. The other aspect of what you're just talking about is that this is coercion. What you're observing is a combination of coercion and enticement,
right,
of individuals to take an unlicensed vaccine product. That is explicitly prohibited by the Nuremberg Accord.
Well, you keep saying that, and they keep saying that you yourself are wrong for even quoting the Nuremberg protocols in that regard.
And so I'm so wrong that there's now a movement to try to change the Nuremberg Accord, just like they've changed the language of what an anti-vaxxer is. In
changing
Webster's,
the Nuremberg Accords,
yep,
simply to conform with the social control they're trying to use for this vaccine?
And they also want to change the Hippocratic Oath.
Oh, boy.
And they've changed the language of anti-vaxxer, this pejorative, so that now in today's Webster, anti-vaxxer consists of anyone who is who dislikes vaccine mandates is by definition an anti-vaxxer.
Oh, this could be the one that does it, isn't it? I mean, as I have written, Dr. Malone, we've reached a new mass hysteria inflection point. And that was when I wrote this book in general about mass hysteria. But I think we actually have passed the mass hysteria inflection point with COVID. For them to take a person like you and demonize you, it's an obscenity that borders on Stalinism. Stalinism.
Well, it's mass hysteria. When I was a bit younger, I read Ayn Rand. I read Atlas Shrugged. That's why my website, frankly, is called Who is Robert Malone, if you get it. And I know very well that another great one is Aerosmith by Sinclair Lewis from the 30s.
I love that book.
Okay. And as you'll recall, in each of those, in so many cases, the storyline ends at some place with torture, harassment, isolation, rejection, etc., of the person telling the truth. And I knew going into this, frankly, when we did the Dark Horse podcast with Steve Kirsch and Brett Weinstein, all three of us have taken huge hits for it. We knew before we started that broadcast that we were going to take hits. And we looked at each other, we discussed it, we said, are you still okay with doing this? And we went ahead. We knew that that was going to have the backlash that it had. But hey, I now have friends all over the world. My Substack is going crazy. I'm embraced by people worldwide and thanked for what I've done and the courage of speaking
up. Well, I understand
up.
That, but you're probably excommunicated from the establishment academic world, aren't you?
You know, I take a long view on this. I've been through, I was a whistleblower against the.
Sorry, lost you. We lost Dr. Malone. Let me pause right here. As you just heard, this is where our connection was lost with Dr. Malone. It was an awful lot of information to process. We will continue this discussion on the next podcast. You're not going to want to miss the entire podcast next time, right here on the Michael Savage Podcast. Spread the word, and thank you for listening.
Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something from it. We have about 400 other episodes available for you to listen to absolutely free. You can go back into our vast library of podcasts and listen to any one of them at any time. And remember this, if you want to listen to my podcast ad-free, sign up for the Savage Premium Membership and get access to ad-free podcasts as well as some premium content from our Savage Archives. How do you sign up for those ad-free podcasts? Please visit michaelsavage.com for a link. Again, thank you for your listenership. This is Michael Savage.